This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. This is the first show in a while outdoors since the season has shifted, so there may be some other noises. So I'm not sure how many parts to this series yet because there's a lot to cover. It's a wonderful book, in my opinion. Very significant reading for understanding what's going on in the world today. I learned a tremendous amount. Stuff that I didn't know much of anything about. And I think a lot of people do not know much about the rare metals war, the dark side of clean energy and digital technologies. The subtitle right there tells you a lot. As I mentioned and reviewed a while back, the book called Bright Green Lies, also a documentary film, the whole sense of renewable and clean are really false verbiage. It's one of the biggest con jobs going. But this not only focusing on the, say, electric cars and the smartphones, but this on the digital technologies and all the so many different technologies that all these metals that I have barely ever heard of or never heard of come into play. Part of why they're called rare is because they are associated with abundant metals found in the Earth's crust, but in minute proportions. So for some of these metals, light and heavy rare earth elements, germanium, tungsten, antimony, niobium, beryllium, gallium, cobalt, vanadium, tantalum, and other rare metals. So one of the things is they are expensive to produce, and oftentimes it's like one of the examples if I remember correctly, it's like breaking down a loaf of bread to find the yeast. It's a small amount. So inside a rock, whatever kind of rock being, they're living beings. The rocks are not dumb. They are living energies, which I'll get more into at some point in this series. So there may be a minimal amount of some rare metal that is essential for certain gadgetry. And that's where the production issue comes in, which raises the Zen koan. Certain point in the book, page 164, in the chapter Mining Goes Global, he poses the question, how much energy do we need to generate energy? So that's the Zen koan of this book. How much energy do we need to generate energy? Something I haven't thought about that much. A little bit, but it's unbeknownst, I think, to the majority of people how much energy goes into producing something. Instead, as was shown in the Cobalt Red book, it's the slick sales room, the slick gadget, the advertisement, the promo. All your friends are you have the gadget, but people say that it's clean and green and renewable, but how much energy goes into it? So that's one of the things that, even though there's been recent discoveries of oil, so I'm not sure how much there's peak oil or not, but one of the things mentioned is that the amount of energy is far more now to produce the equivalent to the amount of oil that was being produced a while ago, and thus the shift to, quote, clean, renewable electric vehicles and such like, that is the big push now. Which is supposedly good for the environment. But how can it be good for the environment when it is destroying habitats and polluting land, air, and water? And there's a quote in here about some Chinese people that can't even grow their rice, I think it is. They can't even grow their own rice anymore. So how good is that? How much of a powerhouse is China then? China is the big power player now in the world because they control they sit on most of the essential rare metals. There's other countries too. The book goes into that in Brazil and Africa and various countries and various specific metals. So that's another thing that the geopolitics has changed. It used to be that a country, you know, certain countries had the clout, whether it was economically or militarily. But now, say that, for example, there's some ingredient, some metal that goes into the phones that, quote, everybody has, and some little country you barely ever heard of, if they have a certain element, they have most of the element for that, then suddenly they can do whatever. They can pull some strings. They can throw their weight around. Whereas, you know, a while ago, that would have been unheard of. So that's part of the title of the Rare Metals War, is that it's, you know, as throughout history, and as throughout history as far as resources and mining, who controls them controls much. So the chapters, The Rare Metals Curse, The Dark Side of Green and Digital Technologies, Delocalized Pollution, that means that, say, you know, a local solar company can say that they're providing clean and renewable energy, which in some sense, okay, if it saves you on your bill and it's not emitting stuff into the atmosphere, that's one aspect of the clean and renewable. But they're not looking at the delocalized, meaning the pollution is somewhere else, which means that, say, the photovoltaic panels and whatever chemicals and stuff go into the solar panels are produced somewhere else, and that leaves toxic pollution and ruins the habitats and poisons the water. That's the delocalized pollution. Another chapter, The West Under Embargo, High-Tech Holdup, The Day China Overtook the West, The Race for Precision-Guided Missiles. That was something I hadn't thought much about how the whole military and, you know, anything that gets made. Something I hadn't thought much about was how much of the mining and the metals are used for military purposes. That's a powerful chapter there, and even at one point it talks about a $2 magnet made in China, that without that, the U.S. F-16 or whatever the heck, the fighter jets that cost like billions of dollars, is incapacitated without its $2 magnet from China. And that even at one point they weren't supposed to have Chinese parts to the U.S. missiles, because, you know, supposedly if China is supposedly an enemy, then how are they having using their parts? But there was actually a law, but they rewrote the law because there was so much money invested. So that's one example of how tangled it all is, and how much these metals are of the earth, and they make the human decisions look quite stupid, in my opinion, because, you know, these people are wrestling with the definitions and oh well, we're fighting someone, but they're providing the ingredient we need for the weapon to fight them, so we're gonna, yeah, and it's not illegal because, you know, they gotta spend their billions of dollars to have the weaponry. So it's pretty stupid stuff, but that's the way the shenanigans of the geopolitics works. The next chapter, Mining Goes Global, and the last of the backwaters. And here's some quotes. The market will become less and less dependent on the fuels of the last two industrial revolutions and will increasingly rely on the metals that are driving the impending transition. And there's a place in China, Batu, that's like one of the hot spots, like the biggest place for minerals. Then there's a Chinese black market for minerals. The 10,000 or so mines spread across China have played a big role in destroying the country's environment. Pollution damage by the coal mining industry is well documented. But barely reported is the fact that mining rare metals also produces pollution, and to such an extent that China has stopped counting contamination events. In 2006, some 60 companies producing indium, a rare metal used in the manufacture of certain solar power technologies, released tons of chemicals into the Xiang River in Hunan, jeopardizing the Meridional province's drinking water and the health of its residents. In 2011, journalists reported on the damage to the ecosystems of the Ting River in the seaside province of Fujian due to the operation of a mine rich in gallium, an up-and-coming metal for the manufacture of energy-efficient light bulbs. So when you read stuff like energy-efficient, don't be fooled. It may be saving energy in the socket, but if it's destroying the earth and polluting, it's not energy-efficient. And in Ganzhou, where I landed, the local press recently reported that the toxic waste dumps created by a mining company producing tungsten a critical metal for wind turbine blades, had obstructed and polluted many tributaries of the Yangtze River. Men, here's a quote, men and women wearing no more than basic face masks work in areas thick with black particles and acid fumes. It's hell, end quote. To complete the picture are toxic pits of chemical discharges from the plants, fields of poison, corn, acid rain, and more. Local authorities tried to police environmental offenses, said the journalist, but the pressure from automobile manufacturers was too great. So there's the con job there. The automobile manufacturers are too invested. Just as they lied, like the oil companies, Exxon, they lied in the 1980s about, they knew about global warming. And those people should be in jail, but they're still out there pumping their thing for electric vehicles. And so that's why the news gets whitewashed. China, later in the book, and there's some mention of China doing some stuff with green technology and actually trying to keep clean, but first of all, we're going to start with how awful the pollution is and how I am quite angered recently about all the analysis I've been reading in the news for years about China, as I mentioned in the introduction, about how wonderful their multipolar this and that is, and while they are doing some good things and are not warlike like the U.S. Empire, they are warlike against the earth and the water and many of the people working. So I just don't get why these pundits and even lefty analysts are so smitten with the geopolitical analysis. And I get that some of it is in response to, hundreds of years of U.S. domination, but they are not looking at the big picture. And that angers me because these are people that are, credited with the smarts, and they're interviewed and they have their PR and this and that left and right. But they're speaking half truths in some way. So that's what annoys me. And that's, again, why I think this book is essential reading for keeping up with what's going on, if you're interested to learn more of the details. The hundreds of thousands of tons of rare earths extracted annually by the mining giant Baogang, responsible for 75% of global production, contributes to the prosperity of the city and its 3 million or so inhabitants. So there's some of the positive side is the prosperity, in quotes. Past the suburbs of Baotou, Baotou, below a quadruple carriageway, a lonely path led me to a cement embankment bristling with pylons, each one equipped with security camera. Watch for intruders. This is how I reached the Wei Kuang Dam, an artificial lake into which metallic intestines regurgitate torrents of black water from the nearby refineries. I was looking at 10 square kilometers of toxic effluent, which occasionally flows over into the Yellow River. This is also the beating heart of the energy and digital transition. I was left speechless during the hour I spent observing this immense disintegrating lunar landscape. The apartments were prohibitively priced for people who could no longer live off land that has become infertile. So that's another issue with all this mining and all the quote progress, that people having a certain lifestyle, but the cost and the ability to not work the land is again under the radar. And later on, he quotes several times, Vivian Wu, WU, a recognized Chinese expert in rare metals. The Chinese people have sacrificed their environment to supply the entire planet with rare earths. Ultimately, the price of developing our industry is just too high. And I may have already quoted this in the previous show, but China is the biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, producing 28% of global greenhouse gas emission in 2015, and 10% of its arable land is contaminated by heavy metals, 80% of its groundwater is unfit for consumption, only 5 of the 500 biggest cities in China meet international standards for air quality, and there are 1.6 million deaths per year due to air pollution alone. In the words of Chinese environmental activist Ma Jun, whom I met in Beijing, this was a monumental error. Other areas for lithium, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina. And then here's the new oxymoron. Everything they say is pure greenwashing, said one of its members. There is no such thing as sustainable mining. So when you see the words like sustainable mining, sustainable development, don't believe it. Not only does it dig out the ground, by definition, it uses chemicals and massive amounts of water, which is a problem. So there's also water shortages around the world. So this whole bid for the digital technology revolution and greening and cars takes tremendous amounts of water to produce these rare metals. So something like a water shortage could stop it. The mining sector in Latin America has a sulfurous reputation, from Mexico to Chile, from Colombia to Peru, and on and on and on this stuff goes. And that is just chapter one, the rare metals curse. A recent report by the Blacksmith Institute identifies the mining industry as the second most polluting industry in the world, behind lead battery recycling and ahead of the dye industry, DYE, industrial dump sites and tanneries. It has moved up one rung since 2013, in which the much maligned petrochemical industry doesn't even crack the top 10. Now hear that again. The much maligned petrochemical industry doesn't even crack the top 10 as the most polluting industry. So there is much misinformation, much persuasion, much greenwashing, brainwashing, much deception going on out there. And that's why this book, that's why I'm going to spend a fair amount of time with this book, because I think it's unraveling something that's at the core of what is going on with the world and the positioning of countries and commerce and this whole wave of, as I've mentioned or written about, if not stopped, all of a sudden there will be, say, electric charging stations, and the gas stations will be minimal, and the whole landscape will have changed. And to what detriment, it's hard to measure, but to great detriment. So many people may wonder, what's the solution? Well, that's another topic. I'm not going to focus on that because there's just so much to get to in the book. One of the solutions, though, is not just trying to replace what we in the world are doing with energy, but lessening our usage, because that's not talked about much either. Why do we have to find another source to maintain the overusage? There's something, what is it called? Somebody's paradox, Jivan, maybe? Somebody's paradox I learned of recently, where you, like an energy-saving thing, it seems like a no-brainer that that's going to save energy, but then what happens is people use it 10 times more. So really, it does not save energy. So we really, that's part of the solution, is to have a discussion and rethink what all this energy is doing and what all these gadgets are doing, and how much, it almost seems like a stupid question, how much destruction of the earth is worth these gadgets and stuff. I mean, ideally, no destruction, but that gets into the whole level of, well, what kind of world and society will there be without that? So that's the kind of discussions I think are important to have. So that'll wrap it up for this part one. Fascinating book, The Rare Metals War, The Dark Side of Clean Energy and Digital Technologies, by Guillaume Petron, published by Scribe. Thanks for listening, and be well.